So, in the sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, after Arjuna hears the summary description of the yoga system by Krishna, Arjuna confesses to Krishna that he feels that doing yoga is impossible for him. And his arguments are very good. He says, the mind is restless, turbulent, opulent, and very strong. And to subdue it, dear Krishna, you should expect like how to capture a hurricane. The mind is more powerful than a hurricane. So Krishna responds to Arjuna by saying, yes, I agree that the mind is most formidable, but it is possible by constant practice and detachment. And that constant practice is called Krishna consciousness, voluntarily forcing oneself to think and remember Krishna. As Krishna says in chapter 8, that my dear Arjuna, you should go on remembering me and at the same time fight. So there is no excuse. You may be a businessman, a housewife, a student, whatever you may be, you continue with your prescribed duties and simultaneously remember Krishna. But then Arjuna says, what happens if someone begins yoga practice but then does not achieve success, meaning becoming distracted, becoming enamored, one becomes ensnared again by material illusion? What happens? Because to Arjuna, he says it feels like to him that he loses both. He doesn't get material success, and he didn't get spiritual success. Krishna makes a very nice opening statement. One who does good, my friend, is never overcome by evil. That's the first thing Krishna says. Similar to what he said in chapter 2, Neha vikrama nashosti pratyavayo navidyate svapam apyasya dharmasya trayate mahato bayat. A little advancement on this path can protect one from the most dangerous type of fear. The most dangerous type of fear is to miss another opportunity for spiritual advancement, meaning a birth lower than human. Because in animal or any lower life form, there is no possibility of making spiritual advancement. One has to wait so many lives and again become a human being, then he can pick up. So that's the greatest danger. But if one gets at least a human birth, or what to speak of a demigod birth or birth as a rishi, the opportunity is there to continue towards spiritual perfection. So Krishna said, even for the attempt, now in the case you brought up, you have told me that he did lots of service here for the temple. That has not gone in vain. The way Srila Prabhupada taught us, everybody has an account, an infallible account, and every item of devotional service is marked down. Even the children, if they come and clap their hand in the kirtan, write it down. If somebody comes to the RT, somebody gives a donation, somebody does any kind of service for Krishna, it goes in their account. And nobody can touch that. It's an infallible account. That's called your Bhakti 401k program. And everybody has it with their name on it. So this Bimal, you told me, his parents told me, he was doing lots of, and the nice thing about him, he was always behind the scene, never wanted any recognition. So that is called pure service. There was no personal motivation. So all, whatever service he has done, that he has taken with him. Now, let's continue with Krishna's answer to Arjuna in the sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita. There are two types of yogis who fall. One after short practice, one after long. One who falls after short practice, the reason one falls is that the material energy ensnares him, attracts him. Meaning, there are still some material desires that that particular individual wants fulfilled. Therefore, Krishna says, go to the heavenly planets, enjoy nicely. Because basically, in the heavenly planets, you're burning up your pious account. And in the heavenly planets, you enjoy. It's like a long vacation. People here in America, they go to vacation, they go to Hawaii, Bali, or in your case, you go back home to India to see your family and relatives. And when you go, you just have a good time. There's no anxieties, everything's taken care of. And probably you eat too much because you're going to so many houses and everybody wants to feed you. So you gain a few pounds. So going to the heavenly planets, you simply enjoy. And you quoted the verse from 9th chapter. Shine punye marcha lokam vishanti. When that account is used up, one comes back to earth. Now in 6th chapter, Krishna says, that person who has gone to the heavenly planets now comes back to earth. He takes birth in two different families. Either a very aristocratic, rich family. In these families, there will be an opportunity at some point for this individual to pick up where he or she left off. Because they're taking birth either in a pious, religious family or an aristocratic family, there'll be so much opportunities where once again he can pick up. The other scenario is that one falls down after long practice of yoga, his next material birth is in the family of transcendentalists. If he takes birth in a family of transcendentalists, too much opportunity. Right from birth, everything is there to induce him to pick up from where he left off. Then Krishna says, after so many births of practice, ultimately he achieves perfection. Now, in the case of Bimal, we learn from Bhagavad Gita, Krishna's, you can say, special dispensation that if someone can think of him at the moment of death, he goes back home, back to Godhead. Now, we don't know that. We have no idea at the moment of death what he was thinking of. Now, his parents told me yesterday there's a photo of him just before, somehow or other, there's a photo of him as he died. And he had a smile on his face. This looks very auspicious. Because generally in these kinds of scenarios, one is overcome by shock and fear, which would not be good. But if this picture is real, then this would indicate that there was every possibility that at the moment he simply surrendered to Krishna. If that's the case, he is right now with Krishna. Then what I told the family and everybody, if that didn't happen, then we can pray on his behalf, which is how I always pray whenever I'm asked to do certain prayers for departed members. My prayer is always this: my dear Lord, please place this person in a birth in the home of a devotee. Because if we take our birth in the home of a devotee, then there is maximum opportunity to finish the business. So that would be the best blessing. My dear Lord, please bless. I should pray for myself. My dear Lord, I am not fit to enter your abode, but please let me take my next birth in the home of one of your pure devotees so that I may continue. Also in Bhagavad Gita, because when there is death in the family, naturally there is feeling of loss, lamentation. We're human beings. And Krishna consciousness does not deny feelings. We're not cold. We're not impersonal. There's an incident in Krishna Leela when Shalva, by his mystic potency, captured Krishna's father, Vasudev, and cut his head off. Krishna lamented. So it's not that we are to deny feelings, but Krishna's instruction in second chapter of Bhagavad Gita repeatedly, nat tvam sochitam arhasi, the word arhasi, deserve. Na, you don't deserve to lament. So, feelings will be there, emotions will be there, but here is an opportunity to utilize transcendental knowledge. That even though I'm feeling a certain way, my intelligence, which is higher than my feelings, kicks in and tells me, but the soul does not die. That, as we very commonly say, even in Western culture, they say, he has gone to a better place. So, by means of transcendental knowledge, as taught in Bhagavad Gita, the intelligence calms down the emotions. And then one is able to continue one's duties. There's an example, very interesting. Hiranyakashipu, the greatest demon of them all, had to give the funeral sermon for the death of his brother Hiranyaksha. It's recorded in the Bhagavatam. And Vyasadeva and Shukadeva are so cool. When Hiranyakashipu is giving the funeral soliloquy, Sri Hiranyakashipu Uvacha. It's so funny. But if you read that section of the Bhagavatam, you would think, hey, I want Hiranyakashipu giving the next pravachan. He speaks perfect Vedic, straight Bhagavad Gita, telling his family members not to lament. The soul is eternal. You would think, wait, this is Hiranyakashipu? Of course, he's doing it because it's politically expedient. He doesn't believe a word he says, but at least externally. So he tells the story, because after the death of his brother Hiranyaksha, the family was lamenting. So Hiranyakashipu was asked to pull everybody together. Everybody was losing it, was wailing and crying. So Hiranyakashipu tells a story that there was a king, Suyagya, who died in the battlefield. And his wives were lamenting, and the relatives were lamenting right there on the battlefield. And the sun was setting, and they had not done the funeral services, and you're supposed to do it before sunset. So, what actually happened was, the loud cries of the queens and the members of the kingdom were heard by Yamaraj. So Yamaraj appeared as a small boy. And in the form of a small boy, he told another story. And in that story, he was actually pointing out their position, that it's foolish to unnecessarily lament. So, this particular section of Bhagavatam is a story within a story within a story. Bhagavatam is great. Moral of the whole point was that even if there is tragedy, we still have to rise above our emotions and still do our prescribed duties. That is the secret of advancing on the path of liberation. We see very beginning in the Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna is lamenting. He doesn't want to fight the battle. But all throughout Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is consistent. Get up and fight. Do your prescribed duty. Overcome the dualities. Because lamentation is just the other side of the same coin, jubilation. Which brings to mind another incident in the Bhagavatam, Chitraketu. Chitraketu had 10 billion wives, but no son. None of his wives could give him a son. So two sages came, and King Chitraketu worshipped the sages, and they agreed, yes, we will arrange for one of your queens to give birth. They made a special potion, some special prasad. The queen would take, she would give birth. And the sages said, you should name this child Harsha Shoka. At the time, the king did not understand, because he was just so excited. Ooh, I'm going to finally get a son. And his first queen, Kritkyaduti, she was given the potion. She delivered a son. The king is so harsha, jubilant. He has got his son. Forgetting only one queen gave birth. There's 999 other queens, and what are they thinking? Oh, now we will become maidservant of Queen Kritya Duti? They all conspired and poisoned the baby out of jealousy. So, right after, the queen called the servant, "Bring my child. I want to see my child." But when the servant saw the child, the eyes were in the back of the child was dead. And then the queen, when she saw that her child was dead, cried so loud, the king heard the cries. He was stumbling as he came. The whole palace, all the other queens were also faking it. Even though they were the murderers, they were also, so everybody is lamenting. The cries were so loud, it was heard in the higher planets. The two sages came back, especially Narad, and said, "Now you see why I told you to name the child Harsha Shoka. In the beginning, you were jubilant. Now you're lamenting." Narada said to the dead child, "Speak." Narada has that potency. The child came back to life and spoke to his parents. "Why are you lamenting? You are fools. I was destined to be your son for that short period. I've already taken my next birth. I am already somebody else's son. Snap out of it." Then the child, he had done his service. So in this way, Chitraketu and everybody got some transcendental realization, which is also something I mentioned yesterday to the family, that he was your son for 35, so many years. You did your service. Now he is somebody else's son or daughter, whatever the case may be. Because two things. We're not in control, and we don't actually own anything. Maybe 15 years ago, I was trying to explain to my father things, because he'll always ask me, "So what is this Hindu philosophy you follow?" Even though for 30 years I've been saying the same thing, it goes in one ear out the other. He still doesn't get it. So one day I was trying to explain to him reincarnation. And then I said, "Yes, I'm your son in this life, but I've had so many fathers before, and I'm going to have so many more fathers in the..." He started to cry. Because he was thinking, "I'm his son forever." But that is what these Vedas are teaching. As the son in the story of Chitraketu pointed out, "I've already taken my, already have my new family already. You had me for some time." So this concept of possessing is something that has to be overcome. And you'll see in Bhagavad Gita, Nirmamo Nirahankara. Nothing's mine, not even this body. You all know, maybe some of you for business, you will lease a car. Instead of buying, you lease. Who does the car belong to? Toyota or whoever. You get to use it, but at some point, you have to, or like me, I rent an apartment. I don't own a house. I rent an apartment. And I can do so much. There are certain things I'm not allowed to do in my apartment because it doesn't belong to me. I'm leasing the apartment. There's an agreement. Our bodies are exactly the same. They're not really ours. They are leased to us by Krishna via the material energy. Therefore, transcendental knowledge instructs us, yes, you have been given this particular body. God wants to see how and what you will do with it. I've been doing a week-long seminar of Bhagavad Gita at Shekhar Agrawal's house. And we're going to do another one this week, right, Shekhar? We're doing the entire Bhagavad Gita in a summary format. So, one of the things I mentioned on Friday night is that all of us have been given things from God. Some of you have great mental, intellectual abilities. Some of you may have double, triple degrees. Maybe somebody else has artistic ability, like Gadadhar, can sing like a Gandharva. He does so great dressing the deities. He painted. He's very, very talented. Others, you may have some good look, or you may be influential, or you may be powerful. Everybody is given some talents, or you may be very, very successful or wealthy. So, whatever it is you have been given by Krishna, Krishna just wants to see what you do with it. Then I gave the example that here we are, we're in this temple, and the plan is to make a bigger one, yes? So I was saying that will surely happen when all of us are fully utilizing everything Krishna has given us already. So we just simply have to rack our brains. Are we utilizing everything Krishna has given us now? If we are utilizing everything fully, Krishna will certainly, that new temple will manifest so easily. Because he'll want it. We learn from Bhagavad Gita in chapter 13, Krishna is Anumanta and Upadrasta. He sees everything and he's the one that says yes or no. In a business, just like your husband is, he told me, he's CFO of 3 hospitals. So when it comes to final decisions of expenditure, he says yes or no. That's what a CFO is, chief financial officer. So the same way, there is a final sanction. That is Krishna as Supersoul. So our focus should be how to get Krishna's sanction. In order to get Krishna's sanction, we have to get everything organized and make sure that we're doing everything we can as properly as we can and utilizing everything that he's already given us. Then also, we have to make the endeavor. As Krishna, as Prabhupada used to always say, he used to make a joke. It's not that Krishna told Arjuna, you sit on the chariot, smoke ganja, I'll do everything. No. Arjuna, okay, Krishna showed Arjuna universal form. When Arjuna saw the universal form, he saw all the Kauravas entering the blazing mouths of the universal form. And the universal form said, they're all going to be destroyed. And the universal form said, only you Pandavas are going to remain. Everybody else is dying. This is before the battle is, he's getting a preview. Like you go to the movies, they show previews. Arjuna was seeing the preview. But then the universal form said, Nimitta Matra Bhava Savyasachin. But I want you to be the instrument and get the credit. Which means Arjuna had to do his part. We, the members of this temple, if I may include myself, we should see ourselves as instruments of Krishna. And the more I see myself as Krishna's instrument, the more we will get the credit. Because Krishna doesn't need it. He wants us to get the credit. But we have to do the service. And I also mentioned at one of the gatherings, in that gathering were several board members. So I was giving a special instruction to the board members that their main function is to enthuse, enliven, and encourage the congregation how to become instrumental servants of Krishna. By their example, by their leadership, I may have told this story, but I'll tell it again, which illustrates this point. In terms of temple managers, which is what the board is. In 1975, I was in Vrindavan. And I had just gotten my second Brahmin initiation from Prabhupada. And so, when Prabhupada came to the temple, he had opened the Krishna Balaram temple in April. Right after opening the temple, Prabhupada toured the world. In August, he had come back to Vrindavan. Before he left, he had given the temple managers some unfinished business because the temple had opened, but there were things that needed to be done. So when Prabhupada arrived, right away, he did an inspection of the temple. And he wanted to see, did his managers do what he had instructed? So I was allowed to accompany that walk, that tour that Prabhupada did of the temple. I was one of the low-level managers, so I was allowed. And Prabhupada, right from the start, Prabhupada had such keen vision. He would find something that nobody would see. Why wasn't that done? And he had his cane. Why wasn't that? And you could see what he was talking about. So the temple had two presidents, a grihasta and a sannyasi. So the sannyasi said, oh, Prabhupada, I'll take care of it. So Prabhupada walked a little further. Why wasn't that done? Again, the sannyasi said, Prabhupada, I'll take care of it. So Prabhupada is going around the temple and he's pointing out so many things that he had told them to do, which they never did. So when the tour was done, and each time the sannyasi, nobody else, the sannyasi kept saying, Prabhupada, I'll do it. When we finally got outside the temple, Prabhupada said, you'll do everything. That is the qualification of an ass. Everybody was like, what? He's supposed to be some sadhu. He's calling his managers an ass. He said the real qualification is to get the asses to do the work. Purport, the manager doesn't mean he does everything. He inspires, cajoles, enthuses, and gets others to do the work. The only way to do that is you have to be ideal yourself. Why was it that we Westerners, Malecha Yavanas and worse, Papayonaya, why did we give up everything and join Prabhupada? Because he was ideal. When we heard Prabhupada, when we saw Prabhupada, we understood, here is somebody I can dedicate my life to. He inspired you. He commanded respect instead of demanded. By his stature, by his purity, by his surrender, you naturally were willing to do anything for him. You just felt like it. So as leaders of the temple, you have to see yourselves as persons who the congregation looks up to, persons that the congregation is willing to follow because of your high character, exemplary actions. This way you will command respect. And then this temple will flourish and thrive, and you have the potential to be the number one temple in all of Southern California. Four, that's all part and parcel. In order to be that, purity is the force. In ISKCON, you learn something right away, practically when you walk in the door. Books are the basis. In other words, we base the philosophy on the Vedas. And if you need one book, Bhagavad Gita suffices, because it's a summary of all the Vedas. So the temple is based on a philosophical foundation. So books are the basis, not my opinion or this person's opinion. Just like a lawyer and a judge, it's based on the law. So a temple has to have a philosophical foundation, the Vedic scriptures. So books are the basis. Utility is the principle. In other words, everything should be utilized to its full capacity to serve Krishna. Whether it be talents or money or festivals or whatever it is we're going to do, it should be utilized to glorify Sri Sri Radha Raman. Then the next thing is preaching is the essence. That's why it's important to have classes on a regular basis and to do preaching outreach programs. Preaching keeps the temple alive. When there's proper preaching, That means there's life. Then the last item, purity is the force. This concept of purity is the life force which keeps everything going. So we want to individually and collectively always try to increase the standard of purity. It begins with me. I myself have to see that more and more I am becoming pure. There is internal cleanliness and external cleanliness. Internally, Shri Shri Radha Raman Bhagavan Ki. Internally, I remain pure by always remembering Krishna, either by chanting or remembering his name, fame, form, pastimes, instructions. You recited and chanted a few verses of Bhagavad Gita. That is internal cleanliness. You are purifying yourself, and those who heard you became purified. There is also external cleanliness. Our clothes, our temple. We should try to make our temple cleaner and cleaner. I've said this before. It's our temple. So, you might recall, I don't know if you were here. A few months ago, I gave an analysis. You go to restaurants. So before going to a restaurant, you look outside. What is their rating? If the restaurant has a D rating, you're not going to eat there. C rating? I don't think so. B? All right. But if a restaurant has A rating, let's go. Nice. That rating is given by how clean the restaurant is, especially the kitchen area. I know, because Los Angeles Temple, they once got a B rating. And when the inspectors came, they said, this is why. You need to do this, you need to do this, you need to do this. We're coming back in 3 weeks. If you expect your A rating, these things have to be done. So, at that time, jokingly, I was trying to say, and I was asking the congregation, so what kind of temple you want? Do you want a D temple, C, B, or A? But we have to do it. It's not that, oh, that's his problem. No. It's my problem. It begins with me. It begins with me. I have to be, what do we learn from Bhagavad Gita? Whatever a great man does, common people follow in footsteps. So, let me show by example. That will become contagious. Not this mentality, well, they should do. No, I should do. Let me first do. Then when I speak, then it'll have some effect. I have to apply that also with me. If I want to be effective as a preacher, it's not a question of how many shlokas I can quote or how many funny stories I can tell. That's not what makes me an effective preacher. What makes me effective is if I'm practicing and following exactly what I'm speaking. Then that will touch your heart. As I gave the example from Prabhupada, us Westerners, us Malecha Yavanas Papayonayas, we could, even though we were so fallen, we could see, here's the real thing. Here is somebody, he's not just a professor. He is living example of what he's preaching. That's why he was able to establish 108 temples all over the world, and he had people willing to do whatever he asked, because that purity was so evident. So, for myself, I have to continuously work on my personal sadhana, and in this way I can hope to be somewhat effective in my preaching. So, let me offer a prayer. Would you like a prayer, a blessing? Because I know you want to do japa, right? Okay. I'm pretty much on time. My dear Lord Krishna, please bless this congregation of Radha Raman from top to bottom. Please remove all the obstacles in their heart. When those obstacles are removed, then they will be able to feel your presence in their hearts. And I think it was Narendra who said, I destroy with the shining lamp of knowledge the darkness born of ignorance. My Lord, please shine in all of our hearts, especially me, but shine in everyone's heart. Remove the darkness of ignorance. Empower us, enthuse us, and enliven us so that we can have a grand, beautiful temple, new, to worship you. Do you like that? Is that all right? Then everyone raise your hand. Hare Krishna! Hare Krishna! Krishna Krishna! Hare Hare! Hare Rama! Hare Rama! Rama Rama! Hare Hare. I want to thank this temple from top to bottom, allowing a Papa Yonaya known as Nirantara Das to come here every month and speak on Bhagavad Gita. I hope that you will allow me to continue this until the day I die. Thank you very much. That section I was talking about, 7th canto, either chapter 2 or 3. If you give me a second, I'll find it exactly. Are there any other questions? Then I guess it's time for japa. Well, it'll take a second. Where's his... Yeah, that's the microphone.